Hello, everyone. This is Luke Jean-Louis, the host of the Deep Voice Man Show. Thanks for joining us today. We have a treat in store for you guys. Our guest is Stanislav Cherenkov, and he is a marketing expert, strategist, and business coach, and he's on a mission to transform one business after another, and he is among the highest performing marketing consulting entrepreneurs in the world. He's worked with firms in the UK, Germany, and he's now based out of Sacramento, California. And he is a six-figure earner, so he knows how to get results for clients. And he is on top of the trends. He's an excellent problem solver, and he knows how to create content for digital marketing purposes when it comes to helping firms grow. And he knows four languages, English, French, German, and Russian, which is amazing. So we are very fortunate to have him here as a guest. He was able to carve out some time in his packed schedule to sit down and have a chat with us. So we are very blessed and fortunate. So I guess to start off, thank you so much for coming on, Stan. And can you tell us about your background and how you first gravitated towards doing what you do today?
Yeah, thank you. First of all, thank you very much for giving me an opportunity to be on your show. You know, like, the story is long. Where do I start? It's like, I have a big background in changing the country of residency. I was born in Soviet Union behind the Iron Curtain when everything was forbidden, in a family which is half German, half Russian, and Germans were a bit mistreated in Soviet Union because of the Second World War, so it was difficult. Then we moved to Germany back in 1989, and suddenly I was Russian. So, again, so who am I? Yeah. So my parents went immediately work to, cover all the expenses. And they invested a lot in us and forced us to go and study. So that's why I ended up to finish the German educational system, finished a German university, and even had the opportunity to study abroad in England, in the greater area of Nottingham, with yeah. So Nottingham is famous for Robin Hood, by the way.
Yes.
So that's how I got my education, but I felt that something is missing. First of all, the education showed me that the business life is boring. Imagine that German books are big as your hand and written down in the smallest possible size. That's marketing. And I thought, like, no, that can't be. I thought about marketing like fun. You're doing fun stuff. You're inviting people to, you know, you're generating attention for people, yeah? So should be something different. And what the first eye-opener was when I was in UK, the two educational system hit on each other, the Anglo-Saxon education and the German one.
Mm-hmm.
And, suddenly all the books were colored. I was like, wow, I'm not colorblind. And it was interesting that a lot of in UK, it's similar to US. The entrepreneurship is very high among the entrepreneurship spirit, very high among younger generation. I was like, I have to do something. Hmm. So fast forward again, I finished the education. Everybody went working for a bigger corporation. And I said, that's not the case. I don't want to do that. Hmm. And I actually started working for almost free to get access not to the working class, but to the owning class, meaning business owners, to executives.
Okay.
And, I was attending a first conference, and behind the table on the upper side was business owner or 300 people, company, another one had 500 people,
right,
and so on. Yeah, and I was the smallest one, and everybody was checking out the suit. Okay, you have still a cheap suit, meaning you are new. Okay, we'll give you a chance. So fast forward, I learned a lot, and lesson I learned there: don't go, don't chase money.
Mm.
If I would chase money, I would be still there. Nothing bad about that. If that's what you want, sure, go ahead. But I wouldn't have freedom. You know, like, I attended every birthday, although I was flying 100 times a year. I was on every birthday of my children. I was there when they were born, when the first step was made. I was there.
No.
I had freedom. Okay, I worked nights. Okay, I worked overtime. A lot of people don't think that, everybody thinks that entrepreneurship and business owning, it's like drinking cocktails at the beach. It's not the case.
Uh-huh.
Most of the times you're sitting, you're just changing the workspace, yeah, but you're still in front of a computer.
Uh-huh.
But it gives you freedom. That's what, eye-opener for me. That's why I choose that path.
Wow, that's wonderful. Thank you for sharing your story. It's an amazing story. And it's interesting. So you were born in the Soviet Union, and so you're half German. My understanding is half Russian, which is interesting combination, particularly for that time.
It is. You know, my wife is Russian, and we choose a date, which is for our marriage, was the 22nd of June. And we choose St. Petersburg as our destination, of the wedding destination. First of all, it's very nice. Everybody who had the chance and go there, it's worth it. It has a lot of history. It's just one of the history-rich cities in the world. But our wedding should be in an evangelic church. And the elder there, the priest, it was a German, said like, guys, why did you choose that date? It's a bad date. Why? Yeah, the Germans attacked the Russians on that day.
Yeah.
And we had like a marriage between German and Russian, you know?
Oh, wow. Well, it's interesting you have that sense of humor. So you got married on June 22nd, the day of Operation Barbarossa, I think it was, they called it. And when I think Germany invaded, I'm a history buff, so I'm eating all this up. So I appreciate it. What was the name of the city? Can you say it one more time? That you,
St. Petersburg, which is back in the days Leningrad.
Okay.
So 3 years they were in the surrounding, couldn't get, you know, like they were in the circle. It's a lot of history, yeah. But
it was like they circled Leningrad and tried to seize it right now. Okay.
Exactly.
So definitely. So again, thank you so much for that. And obviously, so you were studying business, and while you were studying business, the books were boring. They were thick and had small print. But when you went to the UK, you saw they were lively in color. And so, you know, you became fascinated with business and entrepreneurialism and whatnot. But to make a long story short, you understood that the importance of not chasing money and, you know, getting into the owning class and obtaining freedom so you can be there for your children and whatnot. And I think that's amazing. So obviously you've been helping many firms and assisting them grow and whatnot. I'm curious, now we all got hit with you-know-what, a sucker punch, the pandemic.
Yeah,
I'm curious.
We can't pronounce it, yeah.
All right. Well, can you talk to us about the current state of affairs with business and entrepreneurialism, and what challenges has the pandemic posed?
So, you know, like, it's strange that our conversation already started with history. And history tends to repeat itself. What worked well in a Great Depression during wartime works well here. Okay, the channels may be different, but it's the same. These are the same principles. People who survived it and thrived, they used specific strategies and tactics how to grow their business in the bad time. Mm-hmm. So first of all, there is a saying, I like it very much, never get a good crisis wasted.
Mm-hmm.
A good crisis brings always opportunities. Most of the time, people, like I enjoy working out 24 hours, filed for bankruptcy. Why? Because they were over, I think they cannot pay anymore, the investors.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you know, the crisis shook up at the market. And mm-hmm. as a local business, what you do, you actually invest more in communication and in PR.
Mm.
A lot of people do not understand, but you know, like if you spend $5 on a Facebook ad
mm-hmm.
and congratulate everybody for Christmas and Easter,
mm.
you are on the mind of the people.
Mm.
And when suddenly a roof drops and the roofing company did it, guess which company will be in mind?
Right. Of course.
So first of all, give and you shall receive. Give first. Mm. And marketing is all about attention. You know, like a lot of gurus say that attention is the new currency, and they are right. Nothing has changed. The old marketing principles of AIDA, attention, interest, desire, and action. That's how the sales funnel is going through. Nothing has changed. You have to know the history.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know what did work out. You adapt it according to the new time, to the new technologies, to the new social media algorithms, and it works.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And yes,
wonderful.
Challenges are always the case, you know, like always. But again, during good or bad times, you see companies popping up of nowhere, and they do billions.
Mm.
Like Uber. Nobody knew about Uber, and suddenly they was there. Yeah. Overnight success with 15 years of preparation.
Mm.
So you have to be prepared to risk, to invest, and you will grow. So during the bad times, I had a roofing company as a client. We developed a system of FaceTime roof inspections when people were afraid to have literally any engagement with human beings.
Mm-hmm.
So video conferences, video inspections. We did so many things virtually, which mm-hmm. normal local business wouldn't do.
Mm.
And that helped them grow.
Wow. That's amazing, and that's incredible. And so it's interesting. You talked about how with crisis comes opportunity, and, you see this all the time. Actually, I believe crisis, in Greek, means turning point whatnot. And I think Winston Churchill talked about you never waste a good crisis because there's always opportunity. And so – you see this kind of thing all the time, and the history sure does repeat itself. You know, a lot of great firms were created during the Great Depression.
Absolutely.
You know, and so this time period, I think, will be a period of great innovation, great change, and great growth will definitely come out of it. And so it's interesting. Now, you talked a lot about marketing is all about attention, and attention is sort of like the new currency. And you talked about how firms who position themselves well in this regard, and this is something you help them with, can essentially have a great future compared to other countries, compared to other firms who are not particularly adept at this kind of thing. And you talked about giving first, which I think is an amazing philosophy. I like it a lot. And so obviously some businesses are going to have been able to adapt and change and thrive during this period. And others would not, and they sort of shut down. And, you know, it reminds me of the saying, life is 10% what happens to you and 90% how you respond. And I believe that to be very true, of course. And so obviously history is full of these kinds of events or similar events and these things kind of happening. And, you know, we've had pandemics before, actually, I believe in 1918. So it's not anything new. So you're definitely right about that. And I'm curious, obviously, there'll be a world when the pandemic goes away, hopefully sooner rather than later, with the ramped up distribution of the vaccines and whatnot. I'm curious, where do you see things going in the future, and where do you see yourself in that future?
So, first of all, there will be changes, definitely. You know, like, without any conspiracy theories, just there are a lot, by the way. Many people claim there will be fourth industrial revolution. That's conspiracy theory. Again, other people don't say it. But again, history repeats itself. London was full of horse waste, and they thought they will die until a motor vehicle came out. Then they thought they would never recover from smoke until they invented the filters and so on. Yeah, so people are adapting. And yes, local businesses, small pub moms and pub shows are a bit disadvantaged because they are more or less not that flexible. Why? Because a lot of them think they shouldn't invest in their knowledge. That's the only problem. You know, we will have a big shift towards online. Everything. My first industry I was working with, this is the oldest, actually the oldest and strongest industry, oil and gas industry. And we supplied equipment for power plants and oil and gas industry. And in that area, you couldn't sign a contract without visiting the client. It was just impossible. I had to fly to China. I had to fly to Singapore, to Russia, you know, Houston, Texas, by the way, because of all the suppliers. And they spent all tons of money in terms of traveling. Now we have Zoom. And that's normal that people invite, have a conference call, well-dressed on the top and in shorts on the bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah, but... you know, like nobody is afraid to have a Zoom call, and everybody's agree right now that a Zoom call is safe. That's fine, and we can sort the things out. We don't have to travel there. This was impossible 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So see, with just one change, it went. So for everybody who is physically present, who has physical goods to exchange for money, physical services, they have to think about going online. Upsell, cross-sell, downsell their clients through online services. Online apps to help something, you know, like to tune your car, to tune the equipment. You don't need our guide mechanics. You just download the app. You pay monthly contributions, and the app helps you do that stuff. You know, those kind of services will thrive. Everybody will have to eat. Now, probably they will change a bit about healthy eating. Okay.
Right.
The opportunity. So there will be a lot of opportunities. You just have to shift and adapt. Myself, I prefer to be like, until now, I didn't get to a huge crowd. I try to do like a small. I rather have somebody and change the company and themselves literally from 0 to 100 and spend my time, you know, like well invested and see results than speaking to crowds and literally to nobody.
Okay.
So that's why I preferred like 1-to-1. I'm still, if you put it this way, the human, the old-fashioned, but I changed the view as well. Mm. So you have to speak out louder. You have to get higher reach. You have to get more people to think about their future and future of their businesses.
Mm.
So definitely, I'm shifting a lot online. And
wow,
again, in a coaching business, a couple of years ago, you had like Skype. My first coach was also on Skype. Nowadays, you have software like Kajabi where you have on-demand, pre-recorded sessions.
Wow. That's amazing. And that's incredible. So obviously, it's a new normal, and it'll never go back to the way things were prior to the pandemic, I'm guessing. And there'll be a big shift online. More people using Zoom, and obviously this saves lots of firms time and saves people money. Of course, they don't have to pay for plane fare and hotel costs and whatnot. And I think that's amazing. And,
yeah, and the communication exactly, and the communication distance, is much shorter. When did a local mom's and pop show had the opportunity to talk literally to everybody in their region for peanuts, like for $5 ads. Never.
Right.
You had to invest in printed media, and you have been on the last page and had to compete against huge guys.
Wow.
Now you have the opportunity to talk to people next door. And to everybody.
Wow. That's amazing. It's incredible. With the reach that technology gives people and the idea that you can communicate with anyone in the country, perhaps in the world, even if you're a small business, I think that's just amazing. And obviously technology will only become more advanced and efficient as we head into the future. And for businesses of all sizes, including these mom-and-pop businesses. So, again, thank you so much for that response, which I agree with 100%. I'm curious now, as a coach, obviously you're on a mission to help businesses grow and expand. What would you say to someone who thinks that coaching may not be necessary, who kind of rolls their eyes or is skeptical, cynical, why do I have to pay money to someone to give me advice on how to grow my firm? Can I just do this on my own or read a book? I mean, what would you say to someone like that?
Definitely it's possible, but it's rarely the case. I tell you why. Most of the time, it doesn't matter what you do. I love singing. I love sports and so on. You can be trained in a crowd, like singing in a choir, sports in a sports team, drawing in a drawing club, chess playing, but if you want to be better than the crowd, it's not for why do the best performing athletes or peak performer at all have always multiple coaches. It's most of the time not because the other coaches cannot deliver. No, it's most of the time that those athletes feel responsible for their actions and are forced to perform. So they are counted accountable by those coaches. So you have to find a coach with who will hold you accountable so you start performing. That's the first thing. And again, in order to grow, there is, even you go to university, you hear a professor talking about one topic which he studied for 25 years. And it's a kind of coaching, okay? You know the general stuff. You think that you know it. You go out and, there's something missing. So what do you do? You go to your colleague and ask for help, for instance, And he's like, yes, you guys from university are fresh. It's not the real world. In the real world, that's that, that, and that. And at this time, he is your coach. He coaches you and guides you how through the difficult task, through a problem, because he has more experience. So we all are influenced by coaches, by people, in one way or another. Mm-hmm. And people don't see that. If you explain it this way and they say, yes, that makes sense, okay, I understand now why I need a coach. And coaches are not every time, you know, like you pay a coach. I told you at the beginning that I work for free just to learn. And, okay, after a couple of months, it turns out, okay, he said, like, okay, you are over-delivering, I will pay you. But people are, people have to understand that they have to invest in themselves one way or another. And we are all seeking knowledge. The difference is, it is easier to consume Netflix, but there is no knowledge. Jim Rohn said that rich people have big libraries and poor people have big TVs. Yeah.
I like that. That's true. Yeah. Yeah. So first time I actually heard of that quote, and I'm going to be using it from now on. So thank you for sharing that. I love Jim Rohn. So yeah, and thank you for that response. You know, it's interesting how you mentioned the phrase "rarely the case," where people are able to do it on their own, or just read a book and whatnot. Because there's so many books out there though, and exactly. Personal development books. But what the funny thing is, it's a multi-billion-dollar thing. All these seminars, books, but people read all these books, but a lot of times they're not implementing it.
They change definitely, but they grow maybe 1% instead of 10 or 15%, which would be possible.
Right, that's right. And it's interesting. Now, I interviewed another guest before, and he mentioned the phrase shelf help. You know, for self help books, he called it shelf help because so many people get tied up reading books. The books are great to read to educate yourself, but a lot of times. People tend to not be as motivated and stick with it because what happens is a lot of the material in the books is very general. It's not specifically tailored to an individual. And, you know, and you mentioned accountability. The problem is books can't hold you accountable. Only a human being can really hold you accountable. And, a magazine article, blog, or social media post can't hold you accountable the way a living, breathing human being who knows what he or she is talking about can. Like a coach. And so I think everyone needs a coach, whether it's a business coach or a life coach. I truly believe this. And so that's something that I think more and more people need to understand. And coaches, particularly business coaches, they can give an entrepreneur the hard truth. A lot of times they're not told the truth because they're surrounded by employees or yes men and yes women. And they may be too scared to tell the entrepreneur what they need to hear. And so and so I think, coaches provide a lot of value, particularly to businesses and firms. So I'm curious. Now, obviously, you've helped a lot of businesses and grow and you've transformed them and whatnot. Can you tell us any of the most interesting or moving or entertaining stories from your life or career?
Yeah, there are a lot, but for some are entertaining, for some are not. one thing I learned at the beginning is like being present is very, very important. So I explained to you. At the beginning, I was working a lot and said was relying on my. Memory relying on my previous, without training, previous knowledge. And I had a long, during exhibition times, you have from 7 till 9, the normal exhibition, from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. And then afterwards, you go dining out with clients and discuss business. So you return to hotel room probably at 11, 12. Then you check your emails, because some people whom you met during the exhibition, they mm-hmm. follow up and so on. It's a tough time. And you say, like, okay, I can do it without a proper preparation.
Mm-hmm.
So the next day, I picked up one of clients. He was also one of my first mentors, by the way. He a multiple million self-made man,
mm-hmm.
Built several businesses, and all with multi-million turnover. And
mm-hmm.
I was helping him finding suppliers. And then from the exhibition, we came back to the parking. And, you know, like big exhibitions, like you've been probably on them.
Right.
So there, here is a spot of the car. The car is gone.
Mm-hmm.
I looked everywhere. I couldn't find the car. You know, you click the key, nothing beeping, nothing. The car is
wow.
gone. So I have probably to call the police.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, like, okay, let me check another floor.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that the car was there on the same spot, but two floors above us. So I wasn't present at the moment when I was exiting the car. You know, like I was already in the meeting with my mind.
Mm.
And that's where it first hit me. And afterwards, I had to look up how to change that. And I found out that transition times between tasks you do are crucial to your success.
Mm.
So be present where you are. So when you are in the car, be in the car.
Mm.
Don't think about the next conversation or next meeting. Be in the
mm.
car, drive, pay attention to the surrounding, don't dream. Then park, have a transition time, change your mind towards the next task and go. Then
mm.
that way you will succeed and do not mess up everything.
Wow. Thank you. I think that's an amazing story. The idea of being focused on what you're doing, being present, not distracted by something you want to do in the future. You want to have that laser focus on what you're doing right now at that moment in front of you, and to be present, as you mentioned. I was reading a great book called Single Tasking, how it's best to just do one thing, focus on one thing at a time. And too many people multitask or, you know, they think about something else while they're doing another thing. So I think that's a great story. Definitely. Thank you for sharing it. Learned quite a bit from it. And I'm curious now, I give this question to everyone. Obviously, the networking, I'm sure, as you know, is very important. Obviously, when you came to this country, you may not have known a lot of people, so you have to build a network from scratch and whatnot. And, you know, we met on LinkedIn, which is a networking platform. And so networking helps firms to get to a point where they can mostly or solely rely on referrals, which is amazing. And not just for entrepreneurs, but for people who are looking for a job, job hunters, particularly now since unemployment is very high. What networking advice would you give to folks?
Yeah, I would say, like, it's like dating. You don't, you know, like if you date or you like a girl, we are men, obviously, and then we look, when I saw my wife, first of all, I introduced myself. I talked about her, not about me. I
mm-hmm.
want to know more about her.
Mm-hmm.
Not like, will you marry me immediately? And I see a lot of young guys you mentioned LinkedIn, send a connection request on LinkedIn and say, like, hi, I'm doing that for that. Buy from me. It's not networking. I love networking. I would like to know what the other party is doing. Then I adapt and see if I can find a win-win. And if I refer to win-win, I refer to not buying from anybody. They are not buying from me. I'm not buying from them. There is always a win-win possible. There is always a synergy possible to expand services, products, to adapt. And you know people, and they see immediately, okay, this guy is not up to selling me anything. Then we can talk openly, like, okay, people ask for advices, people ask for tips. I'm willing to share, no problem. And then they see, okay, this is a person I can go to if I have problems. That's how they hire afterwards my agency in terms of marketing or me as a coach. Mm-hmm. You deliver, you show that you prove, you don't have a social proof or you don't need social proof in terms mm-hmm. of testimonials and so on. You already did it. You delivered. Mm-hmm. You show them mm-hmm. that you can do that. It's investing. It's a long, you know, if a farmer goes and plants seeds, he's not going next day and dig them up.
Mm-hmm.
He waits. He puts water in it, you know, watering and so on. It's everything is like an investing.
Wow. Thank you so much for that. That's an incredible answer. And, you know, it's interesting. It reminds me of what you said earlier, the idea of giving first. And I think that's so key and critical, and it has to be a win-win. Now, you talked a lot about the long game, obviously farming versus hunting. And, you know, the best networkers in the world would agree with you on that. It's about planting seeds. And it's interesting how, you know, on LinkedIn, a networking platform, people are using it just to sort of cold call or prospect and hard sell, which, you know, that's not what it's about. It's about networking. It's about building relationships. And I was reading a book by Chet Holmes called The Ultimate Sales Machine, and he talks about how most people don't buy from you right away. They don't buy what you're selling when you first approach them, but they may buy from you a year or two or three from, you know, much later on. So it's important to build a relationship, stay top of mind, stay connected, and there's way more potential in that. So, yeah, and, you know, one of the reasons why I started the podcast was the primary reason was so I can build a strong network, so I can start relationships by providing value. So I think there is a lot of credence, there's a lot to it when it comes to networking the right way.
And Chet Holmes is awesome. Everybody has to read this book. Even if you are not in sales, you are in sales, one way or another.
Yes. And it's an excellent book, one of my top book recommendations for folks. So definitely thank you so much for the networking advice. I'm curious, what advice would you give to people who are listening to you say, you know, I want to do what Stan's doing. I want to be a coach, and I want to help businesses grow. What would you say to them? What should they do?
Same a strategy of nonprofits, I would say. I had the opportunity to be in a company where they had a very strange strategy. Before they promoted somebody to be exec, like CEO or CFO, CEO or whatever, they sent them in a nonprofit for a year. And within the year, this potential top exec should be a leader in the nonprofit organization. And that's hard because you have to be a leader without title, as Robin Sharma mentioned it.
Mm.
That means that you are nobody, you can't fire, you can't cut the wages, you don't have any instrument to influence people to perform how you want them to perform, only on real leadership. So when you start out with a nonprofit and try to help them while seeing. These are the, you know, like, it's hard because it's you don't see any results, and the motivation can be tough, motivation of yourself. But you know, like, they don't have to buy from you. They feel not obligated. They will tell you in the face what you're doing wrong, and you mm-hmm. will adapt. You have to adapt what's going on. That's how you learn how to be strong, be convincing, be determined, and focusing on your goals. So the strategy of nonprofit. It doesn't mean that you have to go literally to nonprofit. Yeah, but convince your friends of doing something and changing them. And friends are the worst enemies, by the way. Yeah, I laugh every time about that. So like, hey, guys, I would like to start this or that project and business. Are you crazy? Go find a job. You know, like.
Yeah.
So you have to learn to sell your ideas.
Mm.
That's the strategy of nonprofit. Sell your ideas so the people will follow you.
Mm. Wow.
I recommend to a lot of people. That's how you learn leadership. That's how you learn how to influence people. That's how you learn your weaknesses. That's how you learn your strengths. And then you concentrate on strengths and hire people who cover your weaknesses.
Wow.
Don't waste time on your weaknesses. It's
I
a weakness.
That.
It's a natural weakness. You will spend a lot of time, energy, money to be better in what you are not good at. Makes no sense.
Mm. Wow. That's amazing, and thank you so much for that advice. And you talked a lot about, so starting off, a person should work for a nonprofit. It doesn't have to be an actual nonprofit, but essentially to work for free. It's sort of like an apprenticeship to learn more about themselves and learn more about what they want to do, their weaknesses, their strengths. You said earlier that in the beginning you didn't chase money, and then you ended up getting freedom. I think it ties back to what you said before. Don't chase money and be careful of your friends. They could be your enemies in terms of wrecking your dreams. So you have to be careful. And you talked a lot about how people should focus, obviously, on their strengths and not so much on their weaknesses. They can pay someone or hire someone out to maybe help with the numbers and accounting if you're not a numbers person, for example. And, you see this kind of advice all the time. I was reading a book by Gary Keller called The One Thing, and he talks about that. You focus on what you're really good at, what gets you your strength, what gets you results. And so I think that's amazing advice. And I'm curious, what advice would you give to a business owner who's looking for a coach? Now, they can go to you, which I think would be an excellent decision, of course. But let's say you're busy, you're on vacation, or you have your hands full, and you can't help out every business, unfortunately. So how does a business go about looking for the ideal coach to help them grow and expand?
So I usually say, don't hire me.
Okay.
Why? Because you have to, look around. And before you buy something, you have to know the prices, know how, if you buy a car or several, you test drive a lot. So first of all, it sounds strange, but you have to find a coach who will help you start. Successful business is always long-term. At the first year, people think they will hire a coach and they see immediate results and will get rich or better shape within a week, month. That's it. It's impossible, first of all. Second one, what comes fast goes fast away. If you want a sustainable thing to achieve, your health, sustainable, like muscles or your wealth, you have to invest it long term. So those coaches should give you a guidance through 5 years, next 10 years. They should help you draw up a line how you develop yourself with critical milestones. But for 5-10 years, the first project I had with the mentioned mentor, I was hungry. I was literally hungry. I'm coming from, I don't have rich people, rich parents who would support me. So I had to work. Mm. And they're like, okay, this project is good. We just signed, yes, but it will be profitable probably in 10 years. I was like, what, 10 years? I will die until then. Yeah, you know, like, money now. Yeah, but he was like, no, 10 years. And he was right. And during those 10 years, we found solutions to, you know, like to have small immediate results to survive. But the starving for a bigger result helped me stay hungry. And when you stay hungry, you can achieve more. Mm. When you achieve fast results, you're not hungry anymore. You don't do anything. You fail. Mm.
Mm. That's right. I love that answer. And what comes fast can go away fast. That's amazing. And you talked about, obviously, patience. And, you know, they say good things happen to those who wait. And I believe that to be true. And, obviously it goes back to what you talked about farming. You know, the farmer doesn't expect crops the next day after planting seeds. They know it takes time. And so it's interesting. Now, your parents may not have been rich, but what they gave you was maybe even more important than money is, you know, they helped you to have that strong work ethic and to work hard and to be hungry for education. And whatnot, and then look at you now. So that's amazing. And so, you know, you mentioned for a business to look, when they're looking for a coach, that they should shop around. It's like holding an audition, having an interview, so to speak, for a position.
Absolutely.
Right. And business owners should look at the long-term view when it comes to growing their firm and whatnot. And I think that's amazing advice. And whatnot. I think a lot of businesses would benefit a great deal from coaching, and it's interesting. My understanding is that going into the future, there's going to be an entrepreneurial explosion. More and more people are going to be starting businesses. So I think business coaches like yourself are very well positioned for this coming trend. And so many people are trying to be coaches now.
Yeah, thanks to Tony Robbins.
Yes. Tony Robbins.
Oh, he did. He actually did this whole industry. He revived it and made it as it is.
Wow. That's amazing. And I'm curious now, as a coach, what obviously there are so many coaches out there and whatnot. And what exactly would be your competitive advantage as a coach? What do you do better than most other coaches and whatnot? What makes you different and stand out? Because there's obviously so many coaches.
So I would rephrase it a bit, you know, like,
yeah.
Me personally, I thought I had a curse that I see everything bad around me.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to move towards positive stuff, you know, like focus on positivity, not on negativity. I see everything was going wrong. Then I said, like, see, that's actually my strong side. I walked in construction. My father worked in the construction, and I saw immediately where the guys did bad jobs, and that with 16 years.
Hmm.
I was 16 years old. You know, when I walk into a company, I see immediately what's not working. When I talk to people, I see immediately what's not going well in their lives. That's my strong side.
Wow.
I do not focus. I learned not to focus on the negativity, but I see what's not working, and we change that.
Oh. Wonderful. And so that is sort of like your gift. You have that third eye, that vision, ever since you were young, to immediately go into something and see what's not working out well and focus on it. You obviously have to diagnose an illness before you can try to fix it or cure it. And so you used to think this was not a good thing, but you realized this was your strong suit, this was your strength. And I think that's amazing that you're able to help firms. It's usually these things that are going wrong could be fixed with simple tweaks here or there, and it could produce massively tremendous results. And so, yeah, I think that's an amazing gift to have. Now, here's the thing. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this. You talk about a lot about what's going wrong in businesses when you step inside, but apparently, based on research I've done, there's a high failure rate with new businesses. Many businesses fail within the first couple of years. So I'm curious, why do you think that is, and what should entrepreneurs do in general to turn these statistics around?
So I think, first of all, I would say it sounds harsh that many businesses fail, but the statistics is kindly off, because in some cases they count as failure testing businesses. So when I tested, I had to know how dropshipping is working. I did a dropshipping store, test everything, the pros and cons of each platform, how everything works. Then I got results, but I saw that in order to have massive results, you have to spend a lot. In a dropshipping and ClickFunnels was out there, the margins are like 5%, literally. Those guys make millions in turnover, but have margins about 5%. Mm. 5% out of a million, it's a waste of time. Mm. It's like, go find a job. You will have more.
Mm.
It's 50K, come on. And you had like 1 million turnover. So they fail, they stop. Or me, in my case, I stopped, but I learned. So I failed a business, but now I can adapt everything. So it's not that big figure. It's what you do with the failure. Second one is what I see. At the beginning, people are motivated. I know I have this vision. I have this is a huge market, and they assume it without having a real data. They assume that the market is there.
Mm-hmm.
They assume that they can sell 5,000 donuts on this corner every day.
Mm-hmm.
But their reality shows they can sell only 5. So assumption is another. Don't assume, get real data.
Mm-hmm.
Second one, don't fall in love with your business or with your product. You fall in love that much that you don't see that it has no potential.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, and the most common what I see is the business owner's failure. It's not what we do occasionally, it's what we do on a continuous basis. They wrote a plan for 5 years. They start working and then see, okay, this project is so huge, I don't know what to do. And they start procrastinating, doing one thing, another thing, doesn't work out. So when you chunk down everything in small possible pieces, doable pieces, then you suddenly perform better. So the performance of business owners in the timeline from today to the next 2 years, it drops because of uncertainty, because they do not know what to do, because they start mistreating, they are lost, overwhelmed, and so on. That's why most of the businesses fail.
Mm.
You have to stay on track. You have to show up, no matter show off sometimes, and show up as well. No matter how you feel, nobody cares that you are sick. I was flying to Singapore with temperature, which was 38, which is probably almost 105 something Fahrenheit. I flew to Singapore and to have this meeting. Nobody cared. You had to deliver.
Wow.
When you, with that attitude, you won't fail. And if you fail, it's a failure for other people, but not for you. You just, you know, like, you tested project, it didn't work out. You learned, adapted, started a new one, didn't work out. You learned, adapted, started a new one, you succeeded. But people will say, you failed two businesses. No, I learned.
Wow. Thank you so much for that. And it's amazing. You know, I was interviewing another guest who told me there's no such thing as failure, just learning experiences. And I believe that to be certainly true. You only truly fail if you get knocked down and you refuse to get back up. So that's the only time a person would really, really fail. But failure in general is just a learning experience. And I believe that to be true. A lot of successful entrepreneurs failed at first. You look at the guy who founded Domino's Pizza. very interesting story. Yeah, I'm sure you're familiar with it. And the guy who who founded KFC, he was told no 1,000 times, kept going. And so definitely I believe there's a lot of truth to that. And obviously you talked about how would-be entrepreneurs, they need to do their homework. Is there an actual demand for their product? Is there a big enough problem that their product solves? And they need to understand that, so they need to find real data. They can't do it based on, a hunch or a guess. And you mentioned how business owners shouldn't fall in love with their product. They have to understand the hard realities, objective realities of what's going on, and that business owners need to have that self-discipline. They need to be consistent. They have to do things on a continuous basis, not occasional. And you talked about how you went to Singapore, even though you had a fever. And so that's amazing. I think that's great advice. So you've obviously given us, I think, a lot of important life lessons that can apply to anyone, not just entrepreneurs. And I think your story is just amazing. I love these successful, inspiring immigrant stories, people who come here from somewhere else and do very well. I'm a son of immigrants myself. My parents came to this country from Haiti and whatnot. And so this country's a land of opportunity. There's a lot of success to be had, and you've had quite a lot of success yourself, which is amazing. And so I'm curious, in addition to the life lessons you've shared with us, what other important life lessons have you learned yourself or from others that you'd love to provide to us?
The most important thing is, everybody knows the quadrant of, urgent, important, urgent, not important, not urgent, important, and not important, and not urgent, how you should behave and so on. In business world, in the traditional business world, everybody says urgent and important, these are the prio number one things, you have to sort them out immediately and so on. And in real life, what is important but is what's not urgent, that's where the actual life is happening. So my family is important for me. Yes, it is. Is it important? Is it urgent? No. No. It's not urgent. I can stay longer at work. My kids will just have one day when we don't see dad and kissing them goodnight. Yeah, my kids are still small. Or my health is important. Yes, it is important. But today I'm gonna eat a bit more junk food. I don't have a proper diet, and so on. And it adds up until it's important and urgent, but you can't fix it anymore. You can't fix family in urgency. You can't fix kids in urgency. You can't fix your health in urgency. It's impossible. So the real life happens when it doesn't feel like urgent. You have to spend more time in that quadrant and spend more time there. Everything what's important for you, you have to concentrate on that and do one simple task a day. Send a text message to your mom and dad, say, I love you. You know, like crazy stuff. This is important. Is it urgent? Absolutely not. But that's where life is happening. That's where magic is happening. That's where life events, life memories are generating. You know, at the end of life, we regret a lot. I don't want to regret that I spent less time with my last one. You know, I travel a lot, but traveling is not an obstacle to meet the loved ones. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, physically it's better every time. Yes, definitely. But, you know, like you spend time with them, even if it's chatting. You spend time with them. You put your health first. Spend more time in a quadrant, which is important but not urgent.
I love that. And, you know, I think that's great advice. You know, these little decisions are, you know, that people take for granted are so important. You know, what you do today has effects for, you know, years from now and whatnot. And it reminds me that prevention is the best medicine, as they say. It's better not to smoke and not get cancer than it is to smoke and then get cancer, then fight cancer at that point. So you always have to work on, you know, what you should do early to prevent things from happening. So I love that advice. And it's curious, you talked a lot about successful people have big libraries and how people who are maybe not successful have big TVs. And you mentioned how you like that book by Chet Holmes, Ultimate Sales Machine, that everyone should read, even if they don't work in quote-unquote sales, but everyone's sort of in sales, so to speak. What book recommendations would you give to folks?
There are a lot. And, you know, everybody loves certain dishes. But the nutrition can be helpful or not helpful. So I choose something from the Russian kitchen, and within the Russian kitchen, for instance, I choose the healthy stuff. Same goes for books. Everybody has its own taste. What I recommend is to look on the framework. When you can learn how to work in frameworks, how to see the big picture, read those kind of books. If you go, the self-proclaimed gurus, the books, what they are writing right now, they are so, you know, like specified or thin. They are easy to read, but do not help at all. Why? They try to find a solution for one thing, one single thing. Okay, if that's what you're looking for, yes, definitely read. But our brain works like a big shelf. For each shelf, we have like piece of information inside the shell. And when the unexpected thing happens, our brain goes directly within milliseconds and say, like, for this situation, we need a solution from this shelf. You open the shelf and it's empty. So you can't solve the problem. So read books which will fill up the shelf, which will help you see the bigger picture, the frameworks. Then you can easily solve any problem, any. And it's not because you are all known. No, because you know how a framework works, you will find immediately, you will understand the problem, you will understand how the solution theoretically is working, and you will understand how to find people who are the best in their field, hire them cheap, to solve this big problem. That's what I suggest.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. So it all just depends. You said you look for that shell and see what problem you're trying to solve and whatnot and go from there. Thank you so much for that. And I want to go ahead and thank you for being a guest on the show. This conversation has been very enlightening, inspiring, and educational. And definitely want to thank the audience for listening and whatnot. It can
if you can go ahead and describe all the ways that people can get in touch with you so they can put a dynamic center of influence like yourself in their network.
LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, you know, like even TikTok, I'm there as well. I'm not dancing. TikTok is, by the way, if people haven't, if business owners haven't started a TikTok channel, they should do. The organic reach is massive there. You just show off your product in action, in use, describe what you're doing, and TikTok is pushing actually in the same time zone, meaning that you will have more or less local viewers of your video. So it's not pushing, if I'm in Pacific time, it's not pushing something in European time. So not many Europeans are watching my video. More watching from the Pacific coast, or, you know, so that's how you can get free organic traffic to your store, website, business, idea, and so on.
Wonderful. So thank you. I'm not on TikTok, but you may have convinced me to be on there and to get on there to get that organic reach. And I'm guessing you're probably familiar with Clubhouse, of course, right?
Yes. I'm on Clubhouse, but I didn't host anything yet.
Okay. All right. We'll definitely keep me posted on that. And so thank you so much for that, again, for coming on the show and being a guest. And thank you to the audience for listening and whatnot. Do you want to leave us with any last word or final send-off?
My last words, whatever it is you want to do, do it now. Life is too short to stay and dream.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. And thank you to the audience for listening. I'm going to see you guys in the next episode. And for you, Stan, definitely stay on the line after we're done recording if you can. And, again, I'm going to see you guys in the next episode. Everyone, have a wonderful day. Take care and have a blessed day. Again, thank you so much. Bye-bye. Hey guys, before you go, just real quick, if you can just do me a favor, if you can head over to the Apple Podcasts app, and if you're not there already, and if you can leave me a 5-star review, that'd be great. If you love the show, if you can just go ahead and do that, and that will help to spread the word about the show, and other people can enjoy the show as much as you do. And so if you can do that, that would mean the world to me. And also, if you want to email me with any feedback or any praise or support, please feel free to go ahead and do that. And you can also email me to request to be put on our email list. So we can send you out emails when new episodes come out. So thank you very much for being a fan of the show. Thank you for listening to the show and supporting the show. So if you can do that, go out and give us a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app. That would be great. And if you can email us so we can put you on the email list and email us with feedback and praise, that would be amazing. Thank you so much, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.